available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
That was impressive, David. Very good. Well, I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com. That's the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. People ask, why are you introducing yourselves when the introduction already introduces you? I don't know. That's what we've been doing. We'll keep doing it. And we're the Podcast of Champions. That's why we do these things repetitively, because that's who we are. We talk Pac-12 football each and every week, or half of it's Pac-12 football and half of it's Disney princesses or Civil War generals or whatever we're going to talk about. But we do love talking about it. We try to break it all down. We got some news with National Signing Day this week, so we'll get all that in. Answer your questions like we always do. We're a little bit later in the week show. But we had, you know, great guest Brandon Huffman the last couple of weeks, and we'll do our best to break down the final class rankings for all of the Pac-12 here in this episode. If you have any questions or comments, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is the email address. You could call or text us with any kind of questions you have. 424-532-0678 is the number. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast, and the website is always Pac-12podcast.com, where you can find all the old episodes and get on that Reddit page, Podcast of Champions, and talk with your fellow Pac-12 fans about what's going on in the Pac-12. And of course, if you have an Apple podcasting app, and I do now, I got an iPhone, you can subscribe and rate us for sure. But also, we want to get that five-star rating, positive feedback from you, or negative feedback. But the five stars is what we really crave. And I think we got a few.
Non-negotiable five-star ratings, everyone.
But then trash us in the comments. We love those.
Fine.
Those are
great.
Yeah.
Threaten us. I don't care. Just make sure it's a five-star review.
Yeah. We love
those.
We're
not encouraging threats. This one, we got a few new ones. We got a five-star review from Norm Friendly. Subject line, great listen for non-serial killers and serial killers alike. This podcast is great for all sorts of people, from those of us who enjoy not murdering strangers all the way to those of us who enjoy murdering strangers. Robbie and Dean do a great job and seem to have a great working relationship. Other podcast hosts might judge their listeners for whether they are or are not serial killers, but not here. And as a consequence, the listeners get to hear insightful voicemails from people from all walks of life, specifically non-serial killers as well as non-serial killers.
More. That's interesting. Okay.
That was great. This is from Alex, five stars. Best podcast for Pac-12. This duo started with nothing and continue to have nothing. Nothing but great takes, that is. Want to make money? Don't go with their picks. They are far more knowledgeable regarding UCLA and $UC, but they try their best to talk about the other teams. Having recently acquired COVID-19, I lost my sense of taste. And listening to this podcast, I wish I had lost my sense of hearing. Final warning, if you are related to Jake Browning, do not listen to this podcast. Alex from Beaumont.
That is so good. I just got COVID, and I wish I lost my hearing and not my taste. I mean, is there a higher compliment than that? I don't know if there's a higher.
Maybe. And then we've got another one from Retired Insurance Man, five stars. Oh, this is Frank in Sacramento. Five stars, the Podcast of Champions, it's great. The two hosts are recovering homers for their LA schools, and they always tell the truth. Two thumbs up.
Look at that. So special. So, I mean, just, we have such great listeners. Like, I don't think we deserve the listeners we have.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. Well, I would argue that we actually don't deserve any listeners, but that's just, you know, my general assessment of the state of the quality of our work. But certainly not the ones we have. Certainly not these high-quality individuals who may or may not murder people and put them in the floorboards of their home.
Yeah. Well, if we sound a little different, I'm at my home. I'm not in the normal studio, so I won't be able to do all our drops and our fun, our fun tones. What am I talking? Why am I blanking on the word here? Our all the drops we have for all the different teams. I can't do those. But I also can't do, we got a voicemail and I can't do that. We could read the transcription, David, and then I could add it in afterwards, a little editing magic. But unfortunately, I can't download that one this time. We have a bunch of questions from our listeners. It's crazy. Like, people are fired up about signing day, it looks like.
They're fired up. They're ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've got, I won't say we have a lot to talk about. I wouldn't want to lie to our listeners. But we have some things.
There's a few. Yeah, there's some stuff. I saw, like, if you don't get John Canzano's email, news blast, I like that. I mean, Wilner's is great. Canzano's is great. They're just different feels to it. You know, Wilner's is more like kind of a newsy stuff, and Canzano's more of a call-me thing. But one of the interesting ones I saw from Canzano, I think it was today, we're recording this on a Thursday, is that, you know, for Oregon State's stadium renovations, looks like it's going to, you know, they're going to have something between like 35 and 39,000. So it'll be still like an intimate atmosphere, but they got and I think it's $150 million renovation, but they got a $50 million anonymous donor, to put money towards that renovation. And they haven't found out who it was. I guess there was speculation.
There's a lot of speculation that it's Uncle Phil, Phil Knight.
Phil Knight, yeah.
Because there's a relationship with Oregon State, too. I think maybe a Knight daughter went there, something like that. But anyway, it might have been Phil Knight, might have been somebody else, but somebody who appreciates and loves the Beavers as much as we do here on the show.
That's pretty cool. I haven't heard. I mean, you hear, like, Stanford donations for, like, you know, that kind of money for, like, towards the endowment or whatever, but not necessarily anything for athletics. Like, that's a pretty big one. I mean, there's just, I don't know, I haven't heard a lot of, like, huge donations like that for athletics.
No, that's a pretty substantial one, a pretty substantial single donation. I mean, obviously these buildings cost a truly insane amount of money, and it's crazy that anyone spends this much money on friggin' football, but usually it's from an accumulation. You know, you'd get your $10 million here, your $20 million there, but $50 million, that's a lot of money. Lot of damn money.
It is. Well, congrats to the Beavs. It should be interesting to see what Reser Stadium looks like when that is all done, but they're putting a bunch of money into it, which is great. I love that they're keeping the more intimate kind of atmosphere. It just makes it special when you go up to Corvallis and have to play a game. I mean, there's definitely a home field advantage there. Just traveling to get there, there's just something about it. So I love that they've done that. I think, you know, Pullman, they did a lot of cool stuff there too. So, you know, I think you make those trips, they're still intimate, but they're, and you're still remote, but, you know, you have a better feeling experience, I guess, when you're going there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's National Signing Day. It was yesterday on Wednesday. And it just doesn't feel the same. You remember covering National Signing Day, like, yeah. I guess we can say back in the day, right? Like, it was Christmas, New Year's, Kwanzaa, like, all wrapped in one. It was like you couldn't have a busier day in your year. And it was almost like I forgot, like, it was National Signing Day yesterday. You did work. You had stuff to do. I did a couple shows, whatever. But it's not like the go to bed at 2 in the morning, wake up at 4 in the morning, and just work like a dog all day until you pass out. Like, that's what the way it used to be.
Well, and I mean, just from like a business standpoint, I know it was always, you know, you grow, just taking everyone behind the curtain of the 247 business model. You grow subscriptions in the lead up, or at least you did in the lead up to the big signing day. Now there isn't that. I mean, even the early signing day doesn't really replace it from that standpoint. It just doesn't have the same feel. And this one is just kind of an afterthought. So it's, you don't have that like kind of peaking moment from like a, I don't know, from like a business perspective. And also the day just kind of felt like a party. Like, you know, and yeah, you were working hard, but I know the UCLA site, they would have a literal signing day party where it would be like, you know, 60 or 70 of the message board people. And then they would get people from like the football program to come talk to them. And that's just gone. Like, all of that kind of excitement about the whole thing is just gone. And I think a lot of it's the switch to two signing days. Maybe some of it is the, I don't know, for some of these schools, slightly greater emphasis on the transfer portal versus high school recruiting. there's a lot that goes into it, but like 90% of it is just switching up the signing days. And now it's just, I mean, how many guys even wait till February to sign now? Is it like 10%? Something like that?
Yeah, it's if that, I think, you know.
Yeah, and it's just, I think that's going to get even more extreme to the point where it's just going to be essentially that signing day moved up 2 months. It was a real, I mean, looking at all the classes in the Pac-12, no classes significantly changed, and only a few like got even more than one or two additional recruits.
Yeah, I mean, there were some, I think, like nationally, like I think like Oklahoma didn't sign anybody, you know, like a big program like that didn't sign a single person. I think like Texas A&M picked up some, like Alabama picked up some. Some of the programs did, like Alabama just got better. They were already like a record class. But this, you know, most of the damage was done in December.
Yeah, absolutely. So the rankings aren't too different, actually, from what we went over when we were talking with Huffman, really, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, see, I mean, Oregon held on to the number one spot, and USC was second. But, you know, both ranked in the top 10, so that's good for the Pac-12. Only two, you know, consensus five stars, one by USC, one by Washington, signed in this class. I think Cal might have been third before. They're third right now, but they fell out of the top 25. But you know, UCLA's up there too, like top 30, I believe. So you know, three California schools in the top four with Oregon up there. You know, makes some sense. Arizona made a little bit of a run there. I think they've had some momentum with what they were able to do with Jed Fish and stuff, you know, coming in. Utah's in the upper half. I think there was some, you know, seeing Washington with a, you know, not a big class, but pretty high quality class as far as like getting a five star and a few four stars. But really, like when you look at Oregon and USC, you know, Oregon with 19 four stars, USC with 14 and a five star, you know, no one else had more than in the conference had more than five four stars, and that was Cal. You kind of have two, you know, bigger programs, I guess, with the, you know, the higher ranked classes, and then, you know, everyone else. But you know, seeing Cal where they are, that was impressive. I don't know, did anything else kind of stand out to you, like signing day wise?
So now that Huffman is not on the show, not pumping his happy gas about all these programs, come on, Brandon. I'm gonna, you know, lay on some unvarnished takes here. Stanford's class sucks. It's real bad. like usually they're small, but they're not small and bad. But this one is small and bad. ASU, what's going on there?
That's true. Yeah, they're seventh in the conference. That's with only four. They're only 14.
Not like a
commits.
Super strong seventh. Like it's their average commit ranking is no better than anyone besides Cal, who's ahead of them. And Cal just took 19 guys. 14 commits, not super strong. And Washington, I mean, they don't get a full pass for this. I mean, did they really only have 15 spots to give? And if so, forgive me. But also, they were recruiting, I won't say completely neck and neck with Oregon and USC for a while, but they were recruiting up there with them, like nearly. So what's going on there? Jimmy Lake, I think, for his first, you know, real class as the head coach, maybe needed to hit a bigger home run than this, especially with all the consternation about, oh, and that's a piece of news that we're not talking about, all the consternation about promoting Bob Gregory as their defensive coordinator, who apparently Washington fans hate so much that many of them are foregoing their fandom. They're done with the Husky program.
That bad, huh?
From what I was reading on Twitter, yes. So I think, you know, Jimmy Lake, that's kind of a, you know, fart noise. I think the UCLA's class is certainly better than the last couple for Chip Kelly. I am shocked, still remain blown away that people are talking about it as an objective success or as a non-relative success. It's UCLA. It should be top 30 every year when you're taking 18 plus guys, no matter what. That it's now 29th this year. That's at best par, and really it's subpar. UCLA should be top 20-ish. That's how it should recruit, just typically. So I remain kind of shocked by the tenor of the conversation there. I guess everyone's expectations are just blown to hell. But other than that, I mean, everything kind of, I mean, Cal's is oddly good, but I think from an average ranking standpoint, it's, you know, more or less in line with your expectations. It's just they took a few more numbers than the other schools behind them.
Yeah.
But otherwise, overall, no real big standouts for me.
Overall, numbers are down, and I think we've talked about this before. And I think this is something, you know, Oregon State ranked 12th. They only had 10 players, which is the smallest in the conference. But, you know, it's actually, quality's not terrible, but they have spots that they're using for the transfer portal. And I think we're seeing that in a lot of programs. And in this is a conference that recruits the hell out of California, right? We know, and they didn't play they didn't play high school football. And is there going to be guys that would turn into seniors? I think Brandon Huffman tweeted about, like, you're seeing some good classes from, you know, 1AA and, you know, Division II programs, because there's guys that Power 5 and Group of 5 programs aren't taking flyers on because they didn't get to see them play their senior year. Some of those guys just really, how much do you develop between your, like, 16, 17, or 17 and 18? There's guys that get a lot better, and they look amazing during their senior year, and you didn't even know who they were as juniors. Basically, that's gone. Like, you only are going off what these guys did at juniors. If you're if you're Corey Foreman, everyone knows who you are. It doesn't matter. But one of Corey Foreman's teammates at Corona Centennial that would have got looks because people went to go watch Corey Foreman, and they're like, who's that kid? He's a senior. We didn't even know who he was. Oh, wow, he's amazing, you know, right tackle or something right now. You don't get to see those guys, and so they're going to go other places. But teams are willing to take chances on, well, there's this 3-star guy that we haven't seen film on. He wasn't 7-on-7. Maybe he's going to be good, but I don't know. We didn't get to see him the last, you know, year and a half. But we can go get to the transfer portal and get a guy that played for 2 years at some other program, and we know what to get out of that guy. So that combined with that the eligibility was frozen and you're essentially combining the class of 2020 and 2021. If you signed a big class in 2020, like if you have 25 guys, you don't probably want to bring 25 more in and have 50 guys in your freshman class, you know? But if you can bring in a couple of juniors or a senior, you know, that helps spread out your class a little bit too. So I think there was a lot of factors that limited some of the high school signings, and it's unfortunate for I feel bad for the kids. You know, there's guys that just aren't going to get their opportunities. But I think a lot of it has to do with that. And like, I know Oregon State is going to use a lot of transfer portal guys. So they only signed 10 people, even though they don't have a lot of spots anyway, but that's probably happening at other places too.
Yeah. It really sucks for a lot of these seniors. A lot of guys, I mean, frankly, a lot of high school seniors are going to miss out on a college experience because of the dynamics at play. Some of these schools I know are feeling a budgetary crunch, and the real but slightly unreal scholarship money. I mean, it's not technically money. They're just giving free tuition. There's the additional expenses, but whatever. They're going to justify that. Like, well, do we want to keep a couple of seniors as super seniors and continue to pay for their scholarships? Well, we're going to have to take that out of the freshman class. So I would guess a not insignificant number of schools are going to just take fewer people into the program. But even between transfers and freshmen, they're just going to take fewer people as counters into the program this cycle. No matter how you slice it, just from like a budgetary standpoint, because they're going to say, hey, well, there's value in keeping these, you know, three seniors, but do we really want to take a flyer on more freshmen? So I think there's a meaningful number of high school seniors who not only won't necessarily go to the highest level football program, they might not go to any. They might not, and for some of them, that might mean not going to college, which is just one of these, you know, kind of terrible knock-on effects from this whole experience. I do think it's going to lead to, well, I mean, one possible impact from this that might be on the positive end is it could lead to better than expected group of five and FCS level football, because I think a lot of the speculation is the transfer portal is going to take a bunch of talent away from those groups, you know, essentially from the lower level schools and from the FCS schools. But because of that, because all of these Power Five schools are going to be competing for this market of proven players and they're not going to be out scouting as heavily on the high school end, there's going to be, I would imagine, a great deal of those, you know, seniors who are under scouted this year who end up playing at the FCS or group of five level, who are actually much more talented than that level would indicate, who might otherwise have been discovered in their high school seasons. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch it all shake out. But I think at the end of the day, some, you know, significant number of high school seniors are going to get kind of screwed by the whole exchange.
Yeah. And I would say, like, new coach-wise, Nick Rolovich, I think, did a pretty good job. You know, he actually moved up above where Colorado is. I think Washington State's ninth and Colorado dropped a little bit. So I would say of the new coaches from the last cycle, Rolovich did a better job at Washington State than Carl Durrell did at Colorado. They both signed, you know, 18 commits for Colorado, 20 for Washington State. All 20 were ranked at least three stars, and they have a little bit higher ranking than the Colorado guys. Where 17 of the 18 were three star dudes. But yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, neither gig is easy to recruit to, and I thought with the success on the field for Colorado, you might be able to get a little bit more, you know. But they didn't really do a good job in state, and that's going to take a time. It's probably going to take some time, but I don't know. Yeah. There's just some excitement in Pullman for some reason that maybe I thought would be in Boulder, but maybe isn't there right now.
Well, so in the back of your mind always has to be Carl Durrell at UCLA and how he was more or less a mediocre to bad recruiter there. He's older now. He's learned his stuff from UCLA, but until it's proven, like until they actually, you know, recruit pretty well, it's, yeah, that's got to be a question. Obviously, there were a bunch of extenuating circumstances this year, not only not being able to be out on the road, but also starting late because he was hired late. Like so many other things that you don't, you know, you totally give him a pass on this, but until he proves otherwise, you have to keep that in the back of your mind. You know, Durrell was not an excellent recruiter at UCLA. So that's, I think, you know, I think he showed me a lot on the field this year, I think, from just a coaching standpoint. I think he's improved from his UCLA days, but I will want to see, you know, more from him on the recruiting trail.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a pandemic year. You didn't really get to put all your systems in place and
totally.
That.
Yeah.
So you give guys a pass, but it's, you know, I think they, and I think Rivals even had Washington State ranked higher, too. They might have been, like, number seven in the conference in Rivals, where the composite, we had them, you know, ninth.
Oh, when even Rivals.
Well, just, like, some of it's the numbers. I think the quantity, like, helps their rankings a little bit more. So it's why I like the composite, but it definitely had a feel of a better class overall than Colorado, not like one spot apart, you know, just looking at it. But, you know, the couple of new coaches, but do like Judge Fish's momentum. You know, he's putting together a crazy staff and, you know, cool videos and social media stuff. Like you're, you know, hiring Teddy Bruschi, you know, like they're doing whatever they can to get people excited. But like seeing like guys talk about these 1990, you know, whatever defenses from, you know, the Desert Swarm defenses, it's like, man, that was a long time. That was a long time ago. But that's like what you can point to, like, hey, we were good then, we're gonna try to be good again.
Yeah.
What did you think about that? Like they kind of put out, I think they put out a video of Teddy Bruschi before they announced him as a hire, but everyone was speculating he was going to get hired.
What do I think about him being hired?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Is he? Like, I think he'll be. I have no idea. I mean, he was a linebacker. Did he even coach at any point?
I don't think.
Just going to be like a moral support guy who can talk about University of Arizona being good one time?
I don't even know. But he was like a TV analyst for a while. And
I mean, fine. He seems like an energetic dude, and maybe they find a coaching role for him at some point. I don't know, but it's interesting. What's up with Arizona? They're just doing weird stuff, both Arizona and Arizona State. You know, Arizona State had the new leadership model. Now you've got senior advisors to the head coach. What is this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, did you see? So I think, I don't know if it was Kazana wrote about this, but Ray Anderson threw his name out there as like a candidate for Pac-12 commissioner. And he said, I'm not interested. I want to stay here at Arizona State. And yeah, I think it was Kazana. He's like, no one was considering you. No one was even talking about you. But he worked it into like an extension and a raise and everything. So, like, you know, hey, kudos to
I respect it. I respect it. But yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah, I'm in like a semi bullish territory on Jed Fish. I think he's certainly bringing energy to the job that I never noticed at all from Kevin Sumlin. Certainly trying to embrace what tradition there is at Arizona, and I'm not saying that just to be a snark. That was a little bit snarky, what tradition there is, but I'm not just saying that. I'm saying there really isn't that much, and he's trying to embrace what is there, which, you know, more power to him. I really don't know. I don't know if there's anything to build on with that, like, Desert Swarm tradition. I think that was more just, like, the circumstances at the time. I don't think there's, like, some built-in recruiting advantage that allows you to, like, just recruit tough defensive players. I think it's just, you know, you got to recruit them like anybody else. It's not like Nebraska, oh, yeah, we can always build on the offensive line, or Wisconsin, we can always build on the offensive line. There isn't like one of those built-in things in Arizona. It's just they emphasized that in the early 90s, and they were able to acquire some guys who worked for that. But, I mean, it's going to be working for that. It's not going to be touting that you used to be the Desert Storm 30 years ago.
Yeah. Well, he's so... He's the senior advisor to the head coach, so to Jed Fish. So, yeah, I don't know what his role is going to be, but he's still doing media stuff. Like, he's talking about the Super Bowl, like, or, you know, the NFL. Like, just recently he said that Matthew Stafford wasn't tough enough to play for the Patriots. Like, he's still going to be out there doing his NFL thing. So I don't know how much time is going to be dedicated to this Arizona job. But, you know, I think you have to try, like you said, you know, bring in – you know, the triple option or whatever. Like, you have to try to modernize yourself, do something different, stand out. And it seems like, you know, Fish is doing a lot of that stuff, and they're going to try to be, I mean, he's funny on social media. They do some cool things. If you can get some excitement and players like it, and it, maybe it doesn't appeal to you and me as much, but a lot of this stuff, some of those videos, they appeal to like the 16, 17 year old kids. That's your target audience, you know? You know?
And the most important thing is someone was dead in the water, and from the very beginning, and there was absolutely no energy from anyone in that program. I didn't notice a single thing that would have made anyone excited about coming to Arizona. Now you can see some stuff. The head coach is funny. He's trying to embrace their tradition. He's hiring some dudes who might be able to bring some energy to the recruiting trail. Fine. It's worth a shot. I don't think Arizona has, like, there's not really a further down it can go right now. So, yeah, he's going to bring some energy to it. He's going to bring some passion, and we'll see where it leads.
Yeah. Well, we'll see with that. And did we talk about Tim DeRuiter going to Oregon already?
No, we did not.
So, that's a big, you know, so I guess he was demoted at Cal, right? Like, he was the defensive coordinator and then became like the co-defensive coordinator. But, you know, Andy Avalos goes over, gets the head coaching job, and they hire Tim DeRuiter. And,
Justin Wilcox had to hire his buddy, right?
Yeah. Was it, Sermon? Did he,
I think Sermon's the, is Sermon the current one? Yeah. Sermon's the current defensive coordinator. Yeah. I thought their defenses were better when it was a DeRuiter. I'm always going to screw that one up.
No, you're right.
Why is there a Y in there?
I don't know. I've never asked him. I have not. I will.
Okay. Can you ask him?
Yes.
Because it screws me up. I want to say DeRuyter every time. Okay. Anyway, you get to the bottom of that. But their defenses were better when he was the sole practitioner in that role. And then the defense was not quite as good. So I'm interested. I think he'll do some good things. And certainly a better hire than Washington made, at least according to Washington fans.
Yeah. Well, some interesting stuff going on here in the Pac-12. We don't know. The Pac-12 is looking for a search firm right now. I think they said they want to have like about a month. I know Canzano did a radio interview with the Washington State president, and he made it pretty clear. We want to get this done quickly. You know, it's not going to go past Larry Scott's term. So look, you know, by June or whatever, like they want to have this done. So I think that they'll find a search firm. They had some picked out. They'll interview those interviewing search firms, and then, you know, have like a month or so of interviews and, you know, negotiate a deal with somebody. So I don't know. Do you feel confident they're going to find a good candidate, or I kind of do for some reason?
I mean, I think they'll find somebody who's fine. Like I was saying last time, I don't know. Like, I don't really have a good feel for who you hire with this. I could BS about who you hire for, like, a football coach or even an AD, but for this kind of role, I think, like, Rick Neuheisel somehow got talked about again on somebody's radio show. And, like, anybody who thinks that sort of person, or just like a pure like PR person or a promoter, could do that job, that doesn't like speak to any of my understanding of what that role needs to be. Like, especially for the Pac-12. For like the SEC, I think you can have a little bit more of just like the marketing and promoter guy, because look, that ship's running no matter who's in charge. The Pac-12, like, some tough decisions need to get made very quickly. Like, they're going to need somebody who's, like, good at, like, spinning off, like, media apparatus, right? Like, what the hell do they do with these networks? Like, are there contracts that need revision? Like, what the hell is going to go on with all of that when they actually do consolidate that down to one network or sell the whole thing back to ESPN or whatever it is? But they need somebody with, like, I don't know, real business experience, would seem to me, in addition to, like, all the other, you know, basics that go into it. But so I don't really have a good feel for who would be good, so I'm glad they're, you know, working with the search firm, the whole thing. But I'm relatively confident they'll hire somebody good. I mean, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
think it's a complex and tough job, actually. You know, in typical times, I think it's a, you know, it's a cakewalk. I think Tom Hansen certainly didn't do a whole lot for his, whatever, 70 years in the job. And, you know, Larry Scott collected a paycheck for basically, you know, screwing up. But I think there's going to be a lot of tough decisions very early in the next person's tenure.
It's one of those things that can be a great job. I mean, it was a great job for Larry Scott because he didn't perform well and got paid a shitload of money. But when you take over someone that screwed it up so bad, even if it's a great job, I mean, you could be, if you're going to be the CEO of like General Motors and it's like during some boom and everyone, you're selling, you know, tons of cars and you're on top of all these different, you know, JD Power awards and all this crap. That's different than taking over when like you're getting your lunch eaten by every other car company and you're like last in most categories and you have to like turn things around. And I feel like that's kind of where the Pac-12 is. But maybe not a General Motors. Maybe they're like Kia and they're trying to, you know, they would already be, you know, they're like the RC Cola of the soda world, and you've run RC Cola poorly. Like, you want to take over RC Cola when you've like some soda war happened and you got a great commercial that people started buying your drinks because they just, it was fun and whatever. But the Pac-12 is like, you know, one of those teams where they were like sort of fourth or fifth of the Power Five. And now they've been run poorly and they're far behind and they need a new TV contract. And that contract doesn't happen for another 3 years.
They're still fourth in the Power Five, though. Like, even now, they're still fourth.
You'd still, okay. Well, I mean,
the ACC is bad, dude. Like, go look at everyone besides Clemson. It's bad.
Yeah, it's just like, the problem.
It's the money. I get it. But, like, from a performance angle, like, it's worse.
And, you know, they didn't have a great you know, tier three stuff, I believe. And, you know, now they have the ACC network. And even if that came along slower and maybe didn't have the kind of fanfare and all of that, it's still better than the Pac-12 network, you know?
Yeah, and this is where it gets into, like, stuff I, like, truly know absolutely nothing about. And, like, I don't know if the brand itself has been diminished so significantly that it's going to be hard to even get, like, I don't know, what percentage on the dollar they can get compared to the SEC or whatever when they just do it, just structure it, whatever. Like, just structure it the way the other ones do it if you just make it simple. Or get really creative. And like we were saying way back is, you know, go do an entire rights deal with Amazon Prime, you know, and just see if they'll overpay you for the content. But like do one or the other, like do something that everyone else is doing for less money, or do something completely out there for overpayment. But like this thing where you like try to run your own network independently,
all that did was get Larry Scott paid.
It seems like it had huge cost overruns, and at the end of the day, it didn't and wasn't going to make the money that they thought it was, likely because they were overvaluing Olympic sports.
And it basically was a way for Larry Scott to have two jobs, right? He gave himself, we're going to be a television network, and I'm going to be the head of that too. So
I think I'm trying to be fair to him. I think it reflected a deep misunderstanding of what like the core product was. And I think, you know, I kind of was joking about it for a while, but maybe he really did have a misunderstanding about, whatever, if you like water polo or you like volleyball, fine, that's great. But most people don't watch that. They don't care. They don't care. And they don't care all the way up to baseball. They don't care all the way up to women's basketball, which are in some areas big sports. In the South, you know, there's a lot of huge women's basketball programs. In the South, there's also a bunch of huge baseball programs, but those just aren't big in the Pac-12. You get the occasional like big gymnastics meet, but it's not something that's going to draw significant eyeballs ever. And I think he just had a complete misunderstanding about that. Like I think that more and more, I'm thinking that's actually a realistic assessment of what was going on here. Is that they just completely misevaluated whether they could build a market for that or whether there was an existing one. I don't know what it was, but I think that was a core part of their entire idea that just fell flat on its face almost immediately. And then on top of that, the whole we were going to partner with tech, we were going to partner with all this tech money in San Francisco, and that's why we need to be in San Francisco. What was that even going to be? Because that sounds like just coked out investor talk to me. Like, what was that supposed to be? Because if it's supposed to be my idea, which is go get Amazon Prime to publish your crap, well, don't do that on the Pac-12 network then. You know, do it pure streaming rights and here you go. But that whole thing just it sounded like nonsense from the beginning, but I think that was a big part of why he wanted the network and wanted it based in San Francisco. And then the whole, you know, international element of everything. You know, the Chinese market, trying to build a Pac-12 brand there because the NBA has gotten big in China, because basketball generally is big in China. I sort of get it, but I also like just there's I struggle to see how was that ever going to be leveraged into something that was going to be, I don't know, meaningful money for the Pac-12 or meaningful. I mean, for a college conference, for a college sports league, it's just I think you have to have like multiple impacts. And I mean, are you ever going to get some meaningful number of like Chinese people coming over to California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, and Utah to come play basketball or play sports? Or, you know, I don't know. Is it going to be different from what the number already is? I just think there was a lot of pie in the sky ideas that just were more or less dead on arrival.
I feel like a lot of it was just Larry Scott wanted to be there. He wanted to be the super executive. He wanted to control everything. But when you go into a big business venture like that with really the wrong things prioritized, like you were selling 860 live events a year, so we're going to need 7 networks. It was just like, this is stupid. Like there was no market for that. But how much more difficult did you make it to get on DirecTV? If it was just one channel, it would have probably been on DirecTV, right? I mean, it just seems like that would work. You were trying to get, well, we have seven channels and we want all of them on there. Even the streaming services, you have some streaming services are like, well, we don't have the national one, but we have the regional ones. Just poor decisions from the very beginning. And it's just going to, it just put the Pac-12 so much further back.
Yeah, it seems like there would have been, potentially he still would have been here if that just simple decision had been made differently and they had had a single network instead of the networks. But alas, he didn't. So here we are.
Well, why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and start answering questions. So back in a minute. All right, we're back here on the podcast of champions. We got to get to some questions, David. Now, like I said, I'm going to play the voicemail. I think it's from our resident Stanford fan. Can you look at the transcription? It was hard to read because he uses some colorful language and it doesn't really come out in the Google translation or the transcription thing that easily. But can you get the gist of what he's saying from his voicemail?
No. I want to read this to everyone. Okay. This is what Google Transcript lets us know about the voicemail. Hello, Ryan. Hello, Seafloor Dave. He's not upheld your end. My friend, now I'm feeling acrostic and a tad bit caustic. Death draws nigh. Decode and obey or off. Bye-bye, Exo Jody action. Now, I think he is trying to write or speak in the code of the Zodiac Killer, but I think this goes beyond that because I cannot make hide nor hair of this. Debo departed, uncertainty reigns little, then followed a five-star drain, Ryan's side of the portal in defense of his prediction, given over to six of them, a clear dereliction, ferocious cried Woods, snart game on high, three wins. If they're lucky, this team in decline, nay, cried Shaq in formation of the 33 inciting declamation. We will not follow, mighty nation. Six wins could have happened, if not for a faulty in Eugene, which triggered a Mills practice palsy. Not bad, 4-2, with five away from the farm. Gee, maybe the transfers were less good than harm. Disrespect the recruiting at your own peril. All the wins. Shaw's accrued came from dredging the barrel, vindicating 2 and 3-star grinders ahead. Enjoy dual-set tones as your disc phonic reminder. That is full-on Chaucer. Like, that is Canterbury Tale. Like, what the hell is that? That's old English.
First of all, I might have never been more impressed of anything you've ever done on the show than what you just did. So that was very impressive. That was great. I mean, because I was looking at it, I'm like, I can't make heads or tails of it. You actually made it sound cool.
It's just you have to recite it in the tone of like a dramatic poem because it is written in Middle English.
So I apologize. I don't think we're going to play that. I think we're just going to go with that. Obviously, you could feel that, yes, they had to play all their, you know, five of their six games away from Palo Alto, you know, from Stanford, and, you know, could have beat Oregon. Well, they were playing early on that Oregon kind of blew them out. But, Stanford was definitely better than I thought. I've been pretty wrong on Stanford all the time. If you remember, like last year, I was still like, "Oh, they'll bounce back," and you were like, "Nope, they're gonna bottom out," and they bottomed out. You were right on that one. And this year, I was like, "Yep, they'll bottom out," and they performed well. They played better.
Oh my god! I just noticed the next email. He actually wrote it out for us, and it is a poem.
Holy crap! I didn't even see that. Okay,
are you ready for this?
Okay, yeah, yeah. Let's do
a poem now. You guys ready? it says Zodiac voicemail accompaniment. You've not held up your end, my Sith Lord friend. Now I'm feeling acrostic and a tad bit caustic. Death draws nigh. Decode and obey, or bye bye. XO Zodiaction. A Debo departed. Uncertainty reigned. Little then followed a 5-star drain. Ryan cited the portal in defense of his prediction, given over to cynicism, a clear dereliction. Ferocious, cried Woods, snark game on high. Three wins if they're lucky, this team in decline. Nay, cried Shaw in punt formation. On the UCLA 33, inciting defamation. We will not fall, mighty nerd nation. Six wins could have happened if not for a falsie. And Eugene, which triggered a Mills practice palsy. Not bad, 4-2 with 5 away from the farm. Gee, maybe the transfers were less good than harm. Disrespect the recruiting at your own peril. All the wins Shaw's accrued came from dredging the barrel, vindicating 2- and 3-star grinders. Enjoy dulcet tones as your dysphonic reminder.
So good.
Beautiful.
So that's why the voicemail was going to be hard to read, because it was a Zodiac photo.
Because it actually was.
You, I don't know. See, I asked you if you could translate that, and you said no, but you actually did. So
I think I nailed it, and I nailed the feel for it. Like, I knew it was a poem.
100%. That was amazing. Yeah, that was. I forgot. Yeah, the Davis Mills had the false positive, so they, and his icon, I think, is Han Solo. So that's pretty cool too.
Very cool.
Well, that was great stuff. So yeah, we definitely won't play the voicemail because that's too good. All right, we got an email from Willie. Sorry, Willie, you got to follow that, but that was really good. Hey, it says, "Hi, fellas. Last podcast, Ryan was ranting." That doesn't sound like me. About how bad an executive, quote, Willie Dixon was for our conference under Larry Scott. It was Woody, right? I got that wrong.
Yeah.
But you didn't correct me, right? We just both.
No, I didn't remember.
Yeah, I didn't remember either. So it was, I think I said that on the USC podcast, and they're like, "It's Woody." I'm like, "Oh yeah, okay." I remember, you know what? I said Willie on the back door of the podcast. So there's probably 5. We haven't looked at the emails yet. There's probably like 6 of them that mentioned that. As a man named Willie Dixon myself, I would like an apology for the slander against my name. You were talking about the officiating blunders under, quote, Woody Dixon. Please leave the Willie Dixons in this world out of this. Kidding aside, I enjoy the pod. Thanks, Willie from Stockton. Go Bears. And his email is Willie Dixon.
That's really great.
Sorry, Willie.
All right. We've got caveat Terminator, which that's it's Terminator Beware. Is that where we're going with there?
Maybe. Yeah. Though this is Hitler Day. Oh, God. Okay.
All right. It's Hitler Day. Come on, everyone knows it's Hitler Day.
When we're trying to like translate the subject, you know it's Hitler Day.
I was too busy trying to like just flog my brain for the Latin. last week, David suggested that the more salient firing for Pac-12 fortunes is not Larry Scott's, but Clay Helton's, reasoning that a revitalized USC would raise conference revenues, which in turn would trickle down to other programs. Realizing that this is a gloomy thought for 11 other schools, David allowed for an alternate model with the radical suggestion that those teams should actually become good at football. They'd quickly reap the benefits independent of league revenues through donations, season tickets, merchandise, etc., and would have the money to perpetuate their own success. For the rational fan, that means there are exactly 2 types of schools in the Pac-12 and no more. Those rooting for Clay Helton to be fired, and those rooting for him to be extended. USC is in the former camp for obvious reasons, as would any school with no realistic hope of step change improvement unless Pac-12 distributed revenues rise significantly. David suggests an organism in the latter because the Ducks have the capacity to self-fund and they benefit from USC being less competitive on the field than the recruiting trail. Where do you boys think the other 10 schools fall? So I guess if you're taking what I was saying to its semi-logical conclusion, it would be that USC is somewhat of a rising tide that lifts all boats, would raise conference and revenues and so on and so forth. So which schools would need that versus which schools could actually independently create their own revenue if they actually got good?
Yeah, you could look at it that way. But you could still argue that like a good USC would be better for Oregon to get it over the top. Like if you beat like a bad USC in the championship game and you needed an extra boost to get into the playoffs, I don't know. I mean, that might be a negative. But I think for an Oregon, like the fact that Oregon's won, you know, had the best recruiting class in the Pac-12, I believe 3 years running now, that's something that you probably wouldn't be getting at all if USC was good. So there's, you know, specific benefits there. I would say like for UCLA, I mean, there's benefits like you don't really care if USC is good and like, you know, that's like, yeah, okay, Clemson's good. So we talk about the ACC. But if you're UCLA,
there might be some zero sum stuff going on there too. Like it might be hard for there to be both a very good USC and a very good UCLA. Just
true
location and the LA recruiting base. If one is good and the other is not, is really easy. But if both, I don't know. I can't remember the situation when they were last both good. What was it?
Yeah,
the '80s at some point? Was USC that good in the '80s?
No, like they never. They had like Marcus Allen early on. There were some good battles there. But then like at the end of the '80s, where you had Rodney Peete and Troy Aikman, right? So there were some good battles then.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd have to go back to that point, and that is just a different recruiting landscape. I don't know, but I think there's some element of that. So I don't know that UCLA would ever really want USC to be good.
Yeah, so it's probably a shorter list on who would want USC to be bad, right? Because like, I mean, if you're like Oregon State, if you're Washington State, you probably need like you're benefited if there's a Clemson in your conference. If there's someone really freaking good, it probably helps you. I would say is that fair? Yeah,
I would say the ones who benefit significantly from USC being down are Washington and Oregon, and then UCLA to a lesser extent. From a recruiting standpoint, and I think recruiting, if you recruit well and you have good teams, that's going to have more of an impact on your bottom line than whether USC is good. So I think it's probably Washington, Oregon, and UCLA.
Yeah.
Would be the ones who would be rooting for USC to not be good.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, if you're Cal and Stanford, like, yeah, I mean, you want to be...
Maybe if Arizona State gets really ambitious, but everyone else, I think, would want USC to be pretty good.
Yeah, it would help those conference teams if USC was good, where you could have more selfish reasons to not be that if you're Washington, Oregon, or UCLA. That makes sense to me.
Yeah,
that's an interesting question.
It is interesting.
Thanks, Hithloday. It's
good question, Hithloday.
Yeah. All right, this one's from our buddy Perk. He has 2 points. Ryan. So number one is Ryan. USC has only one Biletnikoff winner, Marquise Lee, in 2012. Is that surprising to you given all the wide receiver talent USC's had over the years? Not super surprising because, you know, it was tailback you for a long time, right? And when sort of like the Carson Palmer stuff with, you know, when Pete Carroll took over, that's when we would start seeing like all these 4- and 5-star receivers coming to USC. They've had some great receivers, you know, over the years, but it was still a running football team. And you know, lately they just haven't been good enough on the national stage. You kind of need that. But yeah, Marquise Lee, like Lane Kiffin just fed him the ball, even though they had Robert Woods on the team. And they had a pretty good run there where they had like, you know, Woods and Lee and Nelson Aguilar and then Juju Smith, Schuster. So it was a pretty good run, but yeah, I'm not super surprised, just because it's, you know, that was it's been a nice run, but it's been more of a recent run as far as like elite receiver recruiting went.
Yeah, and some important context, the Biletnikoff's only been a thing for 26 years. So,
oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, 1 in 26 is not too bad. And you got to remember, if it's only been the last 26 years, a whole shitload of this is going to be air raid.
Yes.
Oklahoma State's featured in here 3 times. Texas Tech, Michael Crabtree is 2x. Baylor's in here. You know, just if you throw the ball a lot, you're going to get in here.
And one of the things is, I think both Dave and I despise are the preseason watch lists of these awards. Like,
well, I despise these awards. I despise the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's all crap.
But the preseason watch list that includes like over 100 people, Marquise Lee was not on the preseason watch list. So you get to pick 100 receivers and you didn't pick the guy that won your award. You know, that shows you probably don't need that preseason list, I would say.
Yeah, and I would be interested, like, obviously the Alabamas in here were good, but a lot of times these are, like, the best receivers on, like, fine teams, but not great teams. Like, Brandon Cooks won it 1 year because he had 130 catches, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're going to rack up some numbers. I mean, you got Georgia Tech featured on here. Oregon State's on here 2x. Pitt's on here a couple of times.
Wow.
Louisiana Tech. Like, it's just, yeah. Anyway, accumulate a bunch of receiving stats, and then you get the Biletnikoff. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you could get, like, a Laviska Shenault, and, like, he's going to have, what, 80 or 90 catches, but it's just, you're not going to win this award. You have to have, it's got to be volume, right? You got to have a lot of volume.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And he says, number two, you guys have dismissed the, quote, we've got a young team excuse. What do you make of it, the, quote, "It's hard to recruit and win here because of our academic standards excuse. This is sometimes used by Cal fans, but largely used by Notre Dame and Michigan fans following a blowout loss in any meaningful game."
It's complete bullshit by all three of those schools. The only school that actually has an ARG here is Stanford. UCLA fans also use it, and it's horseshit there too. Come on.
Yeah.
UCLA's gotten in guys. I know for a fact one of the star players from the Mora years was a failing high school student. Got into school. You get your silver bullets or whatever you want to call them, and however you want to describe it in a bureaucratic way, whatever, you can get guys past admissions if you work hard enough. At Stanford, it actually legitimately can be hard. But Notre Dame and Michigan, no, they can get in anybody. Cal can get in anybody. So it's nonsense. I think it's something that that fans use to prop themselves up. It's sometimes something coaches often use to make excuses for why they can't recruit or don't want to recruit or whatever it is. But it's almost always just complete hooey.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You can't look at it as like a fortress, like, oh, you don't have a 1350 on your SAT, you can't get in. At some schools, maybe you need a certain amount of your football players to have a certain grade, and they can't penetrate the wall, but not everyone. I think Stanford's more of it's like a wall. Like, you can't get in unless you're this, but they kind of use that to their advantage, and that's just, they only recruit those kind of guys, and that's fine, and you're sort of known for that. But we've seen guys, I mean, there were Prop 48 kind of guys back in the day go to Cal. I mean, there's stuff, you know, that happens, and yeah, how many of them can get in? Like, is it a lot? Is it a few? It depends on what the administration's allowing, but it's not like any of those schools, there's not guys that had terrible transcripts that had to take like BYU online courses, like on all those teams. Like, that's happened a lot. It's just,
yeah. And I do want to be clear, like, UCLA can get in a couple of those guys. They can't get in all of them. Like, right. You wouldn't be able to recruit like the entire, whatever, Baylor program, right? Or the entire Texas Tech program at UCLA. You just wouldn't. But I push back on it's hard to recruit and win here because of our academic standards. Are there some guys you probably can't get in? Yeah. They do exist. And at UCLA, they probably exist even a little bit more than they do at Cal, say. But do they exist enough to the extent that it is actually hard to recruit? No. No. Most guys, you're going to be able to get in. And the advantages outweigh the disadvantages. All these Power 5 schools whining about this? No. Get out of here. I mean, are you going to be able to recruit the exact same pool of guys as, you know, your... whatever, state school alternative or whatever you want to call it. Maybe not, but you're going to be able to recruit enough that it shouldn't be a meaningful excuse for why you can't win.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like, well, there's this huge pool of high school players we cannot recruit. Like, that's not the case. You can't recruit exclusively from that pool, but you can go into that pool. You know, yeah. I that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This is from Frank in Sacramento. Odds on favorite. Question for Ryan. After another year passes and USC can get rid of Clay Helton at somewhat reasonable expense, who is the odds-on favorite to replace him? Is it Luke Fickell or the surprise rehire of what would be, what, 70-year-old Pete Carroll?
Yeah, I think he's 69 or going to be 70. Yeah, he's like the oldest coach in the NFL. So, no, Pete Carroll's not coming back. It's been a long time since he's been gone. Apparently, you have to have, if you go to the College Football Hall of Fame, David, you need like 10 years of experience as a head coach. And I think Pete Carroll has 9. And so there's some people are complaining like, well, he could come back as like a honorary thing or something. I don't know. Maybe they do something like that at some point. I think as far as if they get rid of Clay Helton, who do they go after? I mean, the name you hear a lot is Luke Fickell because he was hired by Mike Bone at Cincinnati, you know. Matt Campbell at Iowa State is also someone that has, you know, I think he's got a lot of NFL attention, certainly a lot of college attention. I'm sure there'll be more candidates that pop up. But guys come and go. Like Dino Babers, remember, he was like this, oh man, that guy's amazing. He's like beating Clemson at Syracuse and all that stuff, and then he's just been terrible. I do like the process because I've, you know, talked to some of the people that have worked with, you know, Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna, like the guys that are running the athletic department now. And it actually seems like they do research, like for you, David, if you're hiring a college basketball coach, do you want to hire the guy that just made a run in March Madness? You know, like he's a hot name.
Say somebody who like just his team dunked a lot and he got a lot of hype for it.
Right. Like, or do you go, well, what did he do like in his previous place? What did he do? Like, what happened to the program after he left?
Regular season titles and make the tournament in like 9 straight years.
Stuff like that. And I feel like this new administration will take some of that into consideration, or a lot of that into consideration, as opposed to who's the hot name and stuff right now. They'll actually do research and they talk with agents, where like the previous administrators didn't know, because they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't do that kind of stuff. But
well, let me tell you, Washington, Oregon, and UCLA fans, you do not want USC to hire Luke Fickell.
He's a stud. He's really good. I think Matt Campbell is as well.
Last season was the best year in Cincinnati history. He has the best season. He has two of the top four seasons, according to SRS. Now, I know SRS for this past year was a little bit weird and complicated, but it's currently rated the best season ever for Cincinnati. Three of the top eight all time are Luke Fickell.
Pretty impressive. And the thing with Luke Fickell, though,
that's Brian Kelly was the coach there. If you remember, that's how he managed his name to go to Notre Dame. And Luke Fickell has two of the top four seasons. Brian Kelly has the two other ones, but Luke Fickell's is the best one.
Yeah. And he's an Ohio guy though, from what I, you know, gather. It would be a pretty big move for him to go out of there.
What the hell is Clay Helton? He's like an Alabama guy.
True.
Who cares? What does that mean?
Yeah.
It's California. He'll come to California. What the hell?
But Frank,
USC job. You're telling me Cincinnati's head coach is going to be like, I'm not going to go coach USC, like one of the top three most storied programs in all of college football history. Is that what you're trying to tell me right now?
So if the USC administration needs someone to, I think they could hire you, Dave, and that's the sales pitch you would give. I like it. I think they would welcome you.
Like, when UCLA was hiring a basketball coach, like, they went and got Cincinnati's head coach with no problem. You're telling me that the same thing couldn't happen for USC? And USC's football program is a lot more up than UCLA's basketball program has been for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah. But I think definitely he's a great candidate, and just the connection there. And the good thing, I know SC fans are upset that Clay Helton's still around. They really have made it a better, like, they've improved the house around Clay Helton. And that you can say it's rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, but if you look at if you had hired, you know, Urban Meyer, like, even 2 years ago, you're talking about a total teardown and rebuild, and he's a guy that can do that. But, like, if you bring in, like, a Luke Fickell and there's already a great infrastructure around, it's going to help someone go from a group of five to a power five program and have success. So I kind of get what they're doing. But I understand fans upset that, you know, they wanted a new head coach. So they're doing it their own way. If they replace Clay Helton after 2021, if it's a good or mediocre season, and they get a good coach like that, I think in the long run, fans will be happy. But they're just so used to big decisions getting screwed up that they're not willing to accept that, hey, maybe this is actually some decent people running the athletic department, and they're gonna get this one right. But I don't know. We'll see. All right, well, this is a long one. We got Brian ranking the best Pac-12 football coaches. Okay, let me dive into this one. Greetings, mediocre purveyors of Pac-12 knowledge that have no actual use in the real world. Since it's the offseason, I thought a fun exercise would be to choose the best coach from each Pac-12 school, then rank them. I know this exercise would require you to remember stuff, which is unlikely. So guess what? I did it for you. This is the kind of email I like, David. This is great. Some schools were easy, some were hard. Trying to balance all-time record with best seasons and also give credence to the era in which they played. So here's the list. First of the coaches I chose with their records and with the runner-up in parentheses. Then my rankings. Tell me what you think of my choice for each school and then their ranks. I like this. He starts with USC. I almost said Clay Helton, but it's really got to be John McKay. Coach from 60 to 75. 127 and 40, most all-time national titles in 62, 67, 72, and 74. Definite strong runner-up, Pete Carroll, 2001 to 2009. 97 and 19, two national titles. This was the toughest call other than Oregon. I would agree with McKay. What about
I'd
you?
I'd go Carroll. More elite. The seasons were more dominant. Again, going by SRS, I think it paints a pretty clear picture. John McKay has the best overall team, 1972.
72 was pretty special, yeah.
But the Carroll teams are, like, he's got three clustered in the top seven. McKay only has one. Five of Carroll's seasons are in the top 12. McKay only has two. I think you're more consistently elite was Pete Carroll.
Okay.
So I would have gone Carroll.
I think that's fair. You can do that. You know, and really sort of brought on the rise of the SEC, right? Like, they were competing with that, and pretty crazy. UCLA, Rick Neuheisel. Okay, we're moving on. I think he might have read some other stuff, but no, he says, just kidding, Dave. Got to be Terry Donahue, 1976 to 95. False. 151-74, four Rose Bowls, runner-up Red Sanders, 1949 to 57, UCLA's lone national title. He was 66-19.
That's like, this is like awarding an air raid receiver the Biletnikoff. Donahue was around forever. You luck into some stuff. Also, he was kind of good in the 80s. Red Sanders is the obvious answer here.
Okay.
Yeah. Three of the top six seasons all time for UCLA, Red Sanders.
The was that the Heisman Trophy year too? Was Red or no?
No, that was Tommy Prothro. But Sanders should have. So his two best teams didn't even, or his best team probably 1952 didn't play for anything. But that team was really, really good. But 54 because of the no repeat rule, they couldn't even play in the Rose Bowl. But that was a great team, and that was the one that won the split national championship. But yeah, no, Red Sanders, obvious answer.
Okay, I'll go with you on that. Stanford. Crazy enough, it's probably David Shaw, 2011 to 2020, 90-36, five New Year's Day bowl games, tailed off lately, but great early. Runner up, got to go Pop Warner, 1924 to 1932. He was 71-17.
I think that's right. I think it's Shaw.
It's hard to like compare like those, you know. But Stanford was a power. You know, Cal was a power, but so was like Army and Duke and stuff. So it was weird.
You can make a Harbaugh argument, if only because he started the whole thing, but I think it's Shaw.
Yeah, I think that's fair. For Cal, Jeff Tedford, 2002 to 2012. I didn't realize it was that long. 82-57. Runner-up was Andy Smith, 1916 to 1925. He was 74-16. Went to two Rose Bowls. Kind of slim pickings for Cal.
This is some real Pappy Waldorf erasure.
Yeah.
Pappy really? Waldorf has five of the best eight Cal seasons ever, including the best ever, which was 1949. So if you can give it to Red Sanders for the 50s, then it's definitely Pappy Waldorf for Cal.
He was like World War II-ish stunt, right? Or is that?
Yeah, it was post-war, late 40s, early 50s.
Okay.
But yeah, he was clearly better than Tedford.
All right. I'm going with you there. Oregon. This is tough because Chip Kelly was only at Oregon for a short time, given everything. I think that's been Mike Bellotti, 95 to 2008, 116-55, really brought Oregon to prominence. In the national spotlight, Chip Kelly's the runner-up, 2009 to 2012, 46-7. Chip would be the clear number one if he stayed longer.
I'd still go Kelly. His four seasons were all in the top nine all-time for Oregon.
They're elite, right? So, I mean, yeah. Kind of like that.
I mean, I get the arguments that Bellotti and even Rich Brooks helped build that thing, but it's got to be Kelly.
All right. Oregon State, he said this one's tough. Mike Riley has the most wins, but no conference titles. Got to go Lon Steiner, 1933 to 48. He was 74-49. Oregon State's only Rose Bowl win in 42. Runner-up Mike Riley, 97 to 2014. He was 93-80, almost as bad as history as Cal. Right.
Honestly, for Oregon State, you're picking like lone seasons. So I think Dennis Erickson has to be in the argument for the, again, 2000 season where they were really good. And won the Fiesta Bowl. Lon Steiner, certainly. Tommy Prothro, UCLA head coach. He's got four of the top 12 seasons all time for Oregon State. But I actually don't think Mike Riley's in it. You know, when you're looking at SRS, he shows up. His name shows up first at eighth in the top seasons all time. So I don't think he's in it. I think it's Erickson, Steiner, maybe Pro Throw.
Is the Erickson, like, so that was the Notre Dame win. That was like
11-1, you know, truly an elite Oregon State team, which they've had a few of. So Longsteiner has the best team all time. Erickson has the number two team all time.
Okay, number two. All right. I thought that would be number one, but pretty impressive there. Okay, maybe we'll go with Lon. Washington, tempting to say Sevenwin Sark, but this one is clearly Don James. 1975 to 1992, 150-60 is the record. National title in 91, runner-up in 84. Ask Washington fans about BYU's national title. As a Utah fan, I got to get my BYU dig in. Runner-up Jim Owens, 1957 to 1974, he was 99-82. Yeah, this is Don James.
Yeah, no question. And honestly, that 91 team has one of those, like, not quite on that cusp of, but one of those best team of all time arguments.
Yeah.
So.
Steve Ittman. All right, we got Wazoo, Washington State. This one's easy, although he doesn't have the most wins or the highest percentage. Has to be Mike Price. 1989 to 2002, 83-78, two Rose Bowls, runner-up. O.E. Hollingberry, 1926 to 1942, he was 93-53.
Yeah, I think that's right, Mike Price.
Price had, you know, there was a good run there. Arizona, Dick Tomey, another easy one. And the Desert Swarm. 1987 to 2000, 95-64. Runner-up Larry Smith, 1980 to 86. He was 48-28. Yeah, I think this is a pretty clear one.
You could flip them either way for me, Larry Smith or Dick Tomey.
I just, Tomey had, I mean, I don't know. There was just some more elite stuff there with him.
Larry Smith has the best season all time, 1986. Really? Yeah.
Oh, his last year there. Oh, because he left for USC, yeah.
Yeah, but Dick Tomey also obviously good and more consistent. So, yeah. I mean, Tomey's fine. That's fine.
All right. Arizona State. Another standout, Frank Cush Stadium, right? Isn't it Cush Stadium? Yeah. Or so what? Yeah. 1958 to 1979. He was 176-54. That's a lot of games. Dominated the WAC and led the team to the Pac-12. Runner-up Bruce Snyder, 92 to 2000. He was 103-58. Jake the Snake and a Rose Bowl.
Yep. That was actually, by SRS standards, the best season, 96, with Bruce Snyder. But Frank Cush has the next three and produced a truly elite program in the early 70s. So I think you got to go Cush here.
I like that. Colorado has Bill McCartney, if you remember those days, 1982 to 94. He was 93-55, shared national title. Runner-up was Eddie Crowder, 1963 to 73. He was 67-49.
You know who comes up sixth and seventh on the best seasons all time for Colorado?
I do not.
My man, Rick Neuheisel.
Yes.
Bill McCartney's the obvious answer here.
He's, yeah. He recruited the hell out of Southern California. And, I mean, they had some great teams there. Utah. As a Utah fan, I'm partial to Kyle Whittingham, 2005 to 2021. 134-66, two bowl game victories.
It's no question. It's no question. It's Kyle Whittingham.
Led them to the Pac-12.
You have to go back to the like late 20s, early 30s for a comparable, which was Ike Armstrong, whoever that is.
Yeah, runner-up Ike Armstrong. He was 141-55. He was there a long time, too, 1925-49. What about Urban Meyer? Undefeated season.
That season is, yeah, it's ranked number one overall, but Whittingham has three better seasons than the other season for Urban Meyer.
And Utah's won more than two.
Longevity does matter at a school like that.
He has more than two bowl games, right? I thought he won like 10 in a row or something. Like, wasn't that a streak he had?
Whittingham?
Yeah.
I mean, he's won a shitload of bowl games. I don't know if he's won 10 in a row, but yeah.
Well, two. Maybe he met 12. Maybe it was a typo or something. I'll have to look at that. So his rankings now.
Let me look it up.
Okay.
No, it wasn't 10 in a row. He won 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of 12.
11 of 12. Okay. So, yeah, he wrote the wrong thing there. So his rankings, and we have some different names in here, but he has John McKay first. Would you put Pete Carroll first?
Yeah.
Okay. Don James second.
Sure.
Frank Cush third.
Okay.
Bill McCartney fourth.
Well, okay, we've got other names in here, so let's just do it based off his names.
Yeah. So I'll go through them. Bill McCartney, 4th. Terry John and Hugh, 5th. David Shaw, 6th. Kyle Whittingham, 7th. Mike Bellotti, 8th. Mike Price, 9th. Dick Tomey, 10th. Jeff Tedford, 11th. And Lon Steiner, 12th. I know this was long.
It's really tough because they're all different eras, and it's just, it'd be tough.
Yeah. But that's good. I mean, it's a good list. I think, you know, he put a bunch of data in there, so I appreciate that one.
Yeah.
Good. It's a good off-season one. That's a great, great. We've had some great emails already.
Some fantastic emails. All right. Who's up next?
This is Eric.
Flipping commits. Hey, Dave and Ryan. When a recruit decommits from one school and flips to another, approximately how often is it that the new school straight up beat out the original school for the signature, and how often is it the original school pulled the offer, explicitly or implicitly, signed better recruits to the position, ran out of space in the class, etc.? I'm sure both happened, but fans on Twitter will usually believe their school won a battle where both schools wanted the player but lost a recruit that they no longer wanted anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like asking, like, well, who breaks up? Is it the when a, you know, a couple breaks up, is it the, you know, it doesn't have to be boy or girl, whatever, like A or B, like which side breaks up with the other? It happens both ways a lot. And sometimes you see a school struggling and the guy was like, maybe he was sort of like, I'm going to take a chance on this school. And they're like, yeah, it's not looking so good. I'm going to go somewhere else. And sometimes the school is like, yeah, I'll offer you early. And it's sort of like the, you know, you're taking home someone, you know, like you're flirting with someone at the bar early in the night because you're just not sure. And then like a more attractive person that you like comes along. You're like, I'm going to go over there. So that happens too. I think it's a pretty wide range. I don't know what you think, David.
I would say it depends on the school. I think USC, it's probably more of why don't you go away, kid? I think with some other schools, lower level Pac-12 schools, I think it can be much more, oh, we got a better deal, we're going to go someplace else. I've seen it both ways. I think you're right. I mean, it really depends, but I think it can't be dependent just on the school itself. I think if you're a school that doesn't offer a ton of guys, like UCLA, for example, I think most of the time guys are flipping away. It's because they found something better for themselves, not because the school is pushing them away. But for some schools that overoffer or, have potential to grow in recruiting quite a bit just based off of the usual hype, like USC, I think they could be more on the other end where they're pushing guys away a little bit more at the end of the cycle.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Have either of you checked out WandaVision on Disney Plus? The show is very good so far, but more confusing than emails about Washington tight end coaches. I watched the first two episodes. I haven't watched a single bit since, because my time is limited. I mean, it seemed intriguing enough. I mean, I watch all that stupid Marvel stuff. Like, I've watched every one of those goddamn movies. They're all the same fucking thing, but I just do it. And so I'm going to watch this. I don't know if it's just completionism. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to watch the whole stupid thing at some point. It's the same crap. I mean, it's the, you know, it's the comic booky, you know, she's, you know, in some TV show, you know, and somebody's probably experimenting on her or something. I don't know, but it looks fun. It looks interesting. It's well produced. All these things are really well produced. They're really slick. So yeah, I'll keep watching it. I'll be just somebody, you know, some slave to the machine that is Disney. That's fine.
I have not. I'm not big into the Marvel stuff. I do have Disney Plus, so I should probably start watching some of that stuff. If this was a show, like, I was attracted to the first commercial I saw, and I was like, ooh, this is like this woman who's like in all these like old TV shows and stuff. Like, that's kind of cool. And then I saw like the dude she was with was some like alien thing or something. I'm like, oh crap. And then I started hearing things. I'm like, oh, this is like some superhero thing. I'm like, oh, okay. But if it was like just a show about like this regular housewife that was like in all these old TV shows, that would have been. But then once the Marvel aspect to it became part of it, I was like, I don't know about this. So I just don't know. I don't know enough about the Marvel
universe. You just wanted to watch a black and white TV show.
I thought it was a neat concept, but then I don't know enough about the Marvel universe that I was like, it's like, I don't want to like open a book to the middle chapter.
If I can recommend anything, just don't get started with it.
Okay. I did start to watch Yellowstone. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't. I've spent the last, like, I don't know, month or two trying to catch up on some stuff. So I finally watched Succession. And so have you watched Succession, Ryan?
I have not.
Okay, so you've got to watch it because, I think this needs to be clear. All you people who have watched Succession, how is it that you talk about anything other than Succession? Like, how do you think about anything else besides, like, wow, it must be really fun to write these characters. Like, it is so fun to watch this awful show about these awful people. They're all just horrendous people.
Wait, what? It's so good. What network? What network is it on?
It's HBO.
Crap, I don't get HBO, so that I'll have to. Oh,
then pay the $15 and get it. Come on.
All right. I mean, I don't watch all the things I got.
Just do it. Just do it.
I knew you were going to say HBO. I'm like, that's why.
But then, right. So I followed that up, Ryan, by watching Ted Lasso. Have you watched that?
I have not.
So that's on Apple TV. So I paid the $5 for Apple TV to watch that. And it's the complete opposite from Succession. Everyone in the show is perfectly nice. And it's just like this heartwarming, like, cookie of a show. And I love that, too. It's really good. So anyway, two recommendations from this podcast. Succession and Ted Lasso. And I think Ryan has a recommendation of Yellowstone.
Yeah, and I'm going to – but I can do Ted Lasso because I have my new iPhone. I think I get the Apple TV for a while, I think.
Do it. It's good. I'll
have to try that out.
It'll make you feel good about life.
Nice. Could use that. We could all use that. Year 8 of the pandemic or wherever. I've lost track. But all right, we got Peter in Vancouver. And his question is Oregon the new USC? Gentlemen, Oregon has been getting a lot of attention recently, with many thinking they could soon be competing for a college football playoff berth. But to me, they look a lot like USC since Pete Carroll left. They have national name recognition. They can recruit nationally. They have had top recruiting classes in the conference and top 10 nationally. They have won just enough to get fans excited, but they have had significant changes among the coaching staff, and in 2020, they vastly underperformed the expectations, losing two games and barely winning a game they were supposed to win easily. Mario Cristobal's contract was extended, but how long does he last as head coach if he can't get them into the playoffs? Or will Oregon string him along like they are doing with Clay Helton at USC? Peter in Vancouver, Washington.
It depends on, like, I mean, I get what you're saying. So first, 2020, I think there's going to be a lot of just that was a mulligan year, and I don't think it's going to count for a lot of evaluations of a lot of these coaches. Whether right or wrong, I think that's going to be the attitude. So I don't think that's going to matter significantly. The bit about how long does he last as a head coach if he can't get them into the playoffs, there's a lot of room there. There's a lot of wiggle room there. If they don't get into the playoffs, but they win the Pac-12 the next couple of years, you know, as like a 10-2 team, I don't think he's going to be in any danger. I don't think expectations have risen so far that it's like, oh, playoff or you're going to get fired. I don't think that's the job. Now, if they start to, you know, string together a lot of 8-4s, then yeah, I think he could get canned pretty quickly, actually, because frankly, that would be way underperforming what they're recruiting like. You know, if you consistently recruit as a top 10, top 12 class, you should start producing some top 10, top 12 teams. And, you know, going 8-4 or even 9-3 isn't quite at that level. So I think he's going to have to produce some elite double-digit win teams. But he's done that once already. We'll see what it looks like after this year. I'm not completely sold on him as like a, you know, top-tier coach. But the talent, you know, that level of talent will sometimes just figure things out on its own.
And I don't know about the comparison. I mean, I get the points Peter's making, but as far as like stringing along like Clay Helton, it's just that's more of incompetence where they didn't want to bring anyone that was powerful and good as a head coach and just kind of keep whatever they were doing, you know, going. I think when they extended Cristobal, like they're trying to win. Like they feel he can be a guy. They're recruiting at an elite level. They feel like he can be the guy. I think that's a completely different deal. And as far as the latter years of Pete Carroll, that was like, you know, coming down off the roller coaster where you still had a lot of success, but not probably where they should have been. I mean, Pete Carroll didn't. He was different than Nick Saban. And that's what's the most impressive thing for me about Saban is, like, making a run and keeping it going are two different things. And I think when Pete Carroll had success, he started to try to create his own coaching tree and, like, promote graduate assistants and all this stuff, where Nick Saban is just like, all right, well, I lose the best defensive coordinator. I'm going to go out and get the next best defensive coordinator. I don't need to, like, promote my linebacker coach who was a graduate assistant last year, and because I'm Nick Saban, he's going to be great. You know, he just goes out and gets the best and is able to keep it going. So I think that the comparisons are just different, but I get what you're saying. They're like, they're not there. I mean, those Pete Carroll teams, the problem was with the playoff, like some of those Pete Carroll teams, they weren't good enough to be, they would screw up at like Oregon State or something and not be in the top two, but they probably would have still been in the playoffs. And then you can kind of flip the switch and maybe they would have won some more titles. Oregon's not there yet, but they're obviously they're banking that Crystal Ball can get them there. So I'm not sure I buy the comparisons.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're USC yet, besides the obvious recruiting at a pretty elite level.
Yeah. I think the rest of the things are spam. So
cool. We love spam.
I was like, oh, we got a couple emails left. Like, oh, no, one's an insurance quote, and one's...
We can get auto insurance for the Pac-12 podcast, and we can get fan merch through TeePublic. Great.
Don't even know what those are, but okay.
We should do merch at some point, right?
People that would be great.
They'd love a Herocious t-shirt.
How cool would that be? Herocious. We'd have to have a debate on how
four,
you spell it.
Four people would buy it.
I think more would
buy it. Well, no, I'm talking about half our listener base would buy it, but still, that's four people.
Awesome. Well, great questions, everyone. Thank you for doing those. And sorry, again, apologize. I'm not in the studio. My stupid staff was in there. I didn't even realize. So but it's good, though. I feel like it's being used. My, you know, if I'm leasing out this space, I need it to be used, David. So
that's great. If they weren't there, you should have fired them all.
That's a good point. You guys are all fired. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. I think we still have to – we probably have to go over our preseason picks, right? We never did that. Is that something we could do?
Yeah, should do. Sure. What the hell?
Why not? We could do that. We'll come up with some other stuff. But, yeah, so recruiting's done. Moving on. I guess there's still with the JT kid in Washington hasn't signed somewhere. But you still got, like, a five-star out there. But, you know, for the most part, recruiting's done. And we'll move forward towards 2021 and hopefully spring football. I think there's been some people that have scheduled their spring practices. We'll kind of get
Oh, I know. Some... I know you'll stay on it.
I'm on it. Yeah, I will get on that and find out what's going on.
Well, I
don't.
I mean, you gotta clear your calendar.
Yeah, if we actually get spring games again, but I need to get the. I'd have to get Sling again for a little bit to get the Pac-12 network.
Yeah, I think you'll pay any price. I think Sling could up it to $100 a month, and you'd be like, "Well, it's spring football, baby."
I would not for that, but I will try to watch it. All right, yeah, so we'll get on that. We'll start doing like previews and things and whatever, but keep sending the emails. Please leave us the reviews. The 5-star ratings are awesome on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate those. So thanks for keep doing that. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to our little show, the Podcast of Champions, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.